Hey, PTs, are you maxed out on hours? You tired of endless patient notes? Still chipping away at those student loans? PTLive.me is an on-demand patient clinic hub helping licensed PTs get ahead of the rat race. Stay tuned for more or check out PTLive.me.
This is the PT Pintcast, a podcast that talks about physical therapy over beer. Bringing together clinicians, researchers, and forward-thinking PTs in a show that's anything but boring.
Let there be beer!
This is the PT Pintcast with your host, Jimmy McKay.
All right, another episode of the PT Pintcast starts right now. They say the best conversations happen at happy hour. Welcome to ours. Tonight on the show, she graduated from UCLA with double majors in kinesiology and psychology, received a master's in PT from Stanford, completed her doctorate in PT from Temple University, and an MBA from Troy State in Alabama, board certified in orthopedics and sports, and it's her 30th year working as a PT specializing in orthopedics and sports medicine. She worked as a consultant to the Los Angeles Lakers for 20 years before joining them full-time, currently in her fifth season as the head PT for the LA Lakers, and currently working on another master's degree in high-performance sport from Australian Catholic University in Melbourne. Judy Sito, welcome to the PT Pintcast.
Thank you for having me, Jimmy.
So you've got a million letters after your name. Some of these I've never even seen before. Do you ever rest? I mean, you're still going with degrees even after working in PT this long?
Absolutely. Still going. Actually, I think I need a bigger business card, or I need to use a smaller font. I'm not sure which.
You need to go all the way around to the back.
Could be.
What is this high-performance sport degree from Australian Catholic University in Melbourne? That was the thing that stuck out at me first, because you're still going. I mean, you've got the PT, the DPT, the OCS, the SCS, the MBA, the CSCS, PES, and the CES. That's a lot.
Right.
What's the latest? What's high-performance sport? What are you getting out of there from down under?
You probably heard a lot about analytics. That's a big topic these days in sports medicine. A lot of people are looking at data analysis, analytics with different teams, trying to get an edge in sport. Rather than looking at it from a distance and trying to learn about it on the fly, I'd rather learn about it in the right way and from experts. I had been looking for kind of like the next step in my profession and my career of, so I have this background and this experience, but can I take it to another level? I really didn't want to go for another degree in maybe kinesiology or exercise physiology. It wasn't really going to get me to the level that I was looking for, just another level. So I actually found this by accident. I was talking to the strength and conditioning coach with the Seattle Sounders soccer team, Chad Olarsson. He had just started at ACU, Australian Catholic University. We were talking about that program, and when he talked about it, it sounded exactly what I was looking for. So looking at how to utilize different technologies for injury prevention, looking at recovery, monitoring fatigue, how can we get the athletes not only prevent injuries, but when they're working at a high level, how can we get them to recover faster, stay on the field, stay on the court longer, minimize that injury bug. It was exactly what I was looking for. And a lot of the instructors were actually people I had heard of in the profession. So that really sold me. I actually had 1 month to pull everything together, all my transcripts, all the paperwork, letters of rec, and apply, and got in and just finished my first semester.
Wow, that's really cool, the fact that you were actually looking for something else, didn't actually know it was out there, didn't really know what you were looking for, and then found it kind of in that indirect fashion.
And when I found it, it just clicked. It could fit into my schedule, because I certainly can't go to school on top of my profession while I'm still working. And I think that's a big challenge that we all face. How do we continue to grow and not be stuck in one place? And we certainly don't know everything. I certainly don't know everything. How do I continue to learn and stay sharp? It balances a lot of things for me.
That's a cool answer. That's a good reason to actually go ahead and seek out a continuing ed program. Heartwarming to me as a student who's about to graduate is your 30th year working as a PT, and you're still seeking those things out. I mean, I think that's the definition of a lifelong learner.
You know, when I think back when I was in your shoes and looking at what profession I wanted to pursue and what would keep me interested, it was funny because I remember telling myself, it's like, well, is this going to keep me engaged for at least 10 years? Because 10 years back then sounded like a long time. Mm-hmm. And looking at all the different specialty areas I could possibly go into, being involved in research and administration and education, mentoring, all that stuff, and treat patients, which is what we are being trained to do. It had everything. It's like, wow, this is a great profession for me.
Yeah.
And 10 years passed, and it's like, well, this is, I could do this forever and have all these opportunities and different avenues, so I would never get bored. I'm still not bored. I'm still learning. I'm still doing what I love best, and that's working with people, getting them better. This group of people that I happen to work with just happens to be athletes.
Yeah. So we talked about some of the common questions that people are going to want to know about you. So how did you get started in PT sports medicine, and is basketball your go-to? Was that the sport you wanted to pick? If you had a pick of all the sports, was that your go-to sport?
That's a good question, because when I first started physical therapy, when I graduated from school, I was contemplating two avenues. One was stroke rehab, and the other one was ortho sports medicine. Very, very diverse directions. One of the big factors for me was, for stroke rehab, as challenging as it is, I felt that it had a high burnout rate. You work with patients and their families. They have a lot of times devastating injuries, and it takes a lot out of you. I mean, you really, really work with the patients very closely and their entire families. It's such a long road, and it's such a long journey. And when I happened to have the chance to talk to the different physical therapists working in that field and that specialization, they weren't lasting more than 5 to 7 years, and then they'd switch. So I knew that if I went in that direction, I would probably end up switching, and I'd probably go in orthopedics. But I knew if I started in orthopedic sports medicine, I wouldn't turn back. That would be my path.
Right.
It was by chance that path was kind of like laid out for me, because where I wanted to work, if I was choosing stroke rehab, they had a hiring freeze. So even if I wanted to work there and they wanted to hire me, they couldn't hire me.
Wow.
And then where I did my internship, my very last one, actually did my research project with this clinic, they offered me a job. I said, okay. And I worked there ever since. And until the job came along with the Lakers, that's where I had been. Very happy working all those different areas and all those different opportunities, and was very happy. And one of the best things I liked about where I was at, I saw everything. Non-athletes and athletes, different levels, but all different sports. So anywhere from, you know, you name it, I probably saw it. Basketball, baseball, football, soccer, hockey, water polo, jockeys, dancers, ballet, everything.
That's a range.
So it was a wide range, and I think the youngest patient I ever saw was maybe 4, and the oldest one was 90. So everybody in between. And it was great. It really gave me a lot of variety, gave me the opportunity to be well-rounded. I also had a chance to work on very complex cases when it came down to ortho sports med. And it's funny, because when I spoke to the doctor who was giving me this, one of the spine doctors, Dr. Williams, he was sending me so many complex cases. And I asked him one day, it's like, why do you keep on sending me like your hardest patients that have had this problem for years? They've seen all these different therapists. Why do you keep on doing that? He goes, well, because you get them better. It's like, well, I don't have a choice, do I? I mean, because you're sending them to me. And then I realize you're actually helping me get better by giving me these cases, because if they've tried all these different methods and they're not getting better, I have to come up with something else. And by coming up with something else and really, really making myself think about this entire case and them as a person and why they continue to have problems, what is actually going on, maybe a better therapist. So all these different challenges, it just made me a better therapist. So in terms of basketball, I had a lot of different working relationships with a lot of different teams, international teams across the country, and all different sports. But I had a long-term relationship with the Lakers. And I had gotten to the point where I got as close to being with the team without actually being a member of the team. So when an opening became available, they asked me, well, do you want to join our organization? It's one of those points in your life. It's like a fork in the road. It's like, okay, do I do it or do I not? But it was also, well, if I let this pass, I don't know when it's going to actually come again. And even if I'm ready, they might not have this position open again. If I took it, I can certainly always come back to what I was doing. That door hasn't closed. So in fact, I still work at the clinic, Select Physical Therapy Clinic in Los Angeles during the off season. So it gives me a chance to work with non-professional basketball players, even though during the off season, I can see other teams, players, other athletes, non-athletes, whoever. It's one of those positions, well, okay, the opportunity is before me, and I could use a change, stretch myself a little bit,
mm-hmm.
take that chance of diving into something a little bit uncertain, even though I'd worked with his team for a long time, knew everybody, but it's still different working full-time,
sure.
traveling with the team, being around them every single day. And it's been great.
Well, let me ask you this. You talked about seeing complex cases. You talked about seeing, you know, weekend warriors or non-athletes and athletes. Now going from that and still being able to work there, what's the difference, or is there a difference, I guess would be a better question, in working with a non-athlete or a weekend warrior or high school player and a pro athlete? Now, obviously, the pro athlete is a high caliber athlete. Any differences that I just wouldn't think of?
Well, you know, I always think of each person as a person, and they happen to be the pro athlete happens to have a different kind of job than some other people. But each person, and you might have 10 ACLs, 10 people with back problems, but they all present differently because their goals are different, because mm-hmm. they're different people and their motivations are different, their fears are different, their levels of trying to push it are different. So that's what makes it interesting, because the injury itself is pretty, to me, it's pretty clear cut. But when you have like a pro athlete and you're dealing with getting them back to their sport, you're not only dealing with the athlete, but their agent, their personal coach, their family, the general manager, the head coach, the trainer, you name it, there's a lot of people involved. And mm-hmm. that part is actually harder to manage than the actual injury sometimes. The athlete itself, themselves, they're being pulled in so many different directions. It's hard to focus their attention sometimes because everybody has their own agenda. So the part that I think people who want to get into this specialty area, the hard part they have is managing people. If you aren't good at managing the injury to begin with, you're really going to have a hard time adding the people aspect.
Yeah, especially because some of those people are pulling him, as you said, in different directions, and their motivations and their reasons for having that athlete back on the court are completely different than yours.
Absolutely. So when I think about the difference between the pro athletes that I'm working with versus the maybe the non-pro athlete that are in the clinic, their concerns and their goals are no less important to me than a pro athlete. You know, just because that's not their job, it's just as important to them to be able to return to their daily activities, their sport, their fun, their job. Because if they've got a back problem, maybe they can't sit, you know, 7-8 hours a day at their desk. Maybe they need to be able to lift things if they work at an airport and they're a baggage claim agent and they have to be able to lift and go home and play with their kids. I always think it's interesting to find out, well, what is important to you? What are your goals and how can I guide you? I think that's an important point. And it's like, I can't fix people, especially if they don't want to be fixed, but I can certainly guide them and I can share information with them. And then it's up to them to want to be able to or understand or see the importance of doing this program on their own, because my goal is to make them independent, but they don't need me anymore.
Right.
You know, I have so many people, and I'm sure you've encountered it during your internships, where they're looking at you and they go, fix me.
Mm-hmm.
Like, well, I can't fix you.
Can't be done.
I can help you.
Yeah.
Can't be done. So many people that say, you know, you fix me. They don't do their stuff. They don't do their homework. They don't do what you ask them to do. Maybe you need to review it because they don't quite understand the importance. And we go over this. If they don't care, if they don't take the time, I can't care more than they can about getting better. So if they don't care, I certainly can't care more than they do.
Right.
If you're not buying into this for whatever reason, and I've tried to remove the barriers on why it might be a difficulty, if you're not helping yourself, I can't help you.
Right.
It doesn't happen.
Yeah, we talked about that before. Is surgery is done to you and medication is given to you, but physical therapy, you as the patient need to be on board 100% of the time, or else it will not go anywhere. And it's cool to hear your approach really is so great, because it's similar no matter who your patient is. And I think that's a really important lesson that I just perked up to, is that's how my last CI taught me to approach it. What is your patient's goals? And make sure you know those, or else you don't know the goal of this person's physical therapy. This person is important, and keep that in mind, because if you don't, then as you said, what's the point?
Absolutely.
What's the goal? So just to preface this for the audience, you know, asking Judy on the show, of course, she's the Lakers PT. It's cool. It's high profile. But you had prefaced it by saying you can't talk about individual players. And we completely respect that, because they're your patients.
Absolutely.
And you can't ask about something specific. And of course, we won't do that. But I have a question about this. Being in an outpatient orthopedics for one of my rotations, I work with my patients. Some of them are athletes. And we work with them in the clinic. They leave. They come back. They report back and we hear about what had happened since their last episode of care. But you work with a team and you travel with the team and you're with them a lot more than outpatient orthopedic sports PT. How does that change the dynamic? Because essentially, Judy, you're not his PT, you're on the team. You are an LA Laker. How does that change the dynamic in terms of your relationship with the players?
I think it's great because one of the hard parts as a clinician is that you work with your patient, you instruct them, and then they go away. Maybe they're at their job and, you know, they're trying to, that is a goal, to be returned to their job, whatever they're doing, return to the sport, whatever they're doing. I get to see them do it. I get to see them actually do the sport, actually go through different drills, actually talk to the coaches, see them, and then give immediate feedback. I don't have to wait for them to come back and tell me. I can talk to them right then and there.
Right.
And I see them every day. I get to know their habits, their tendencies. There's a greater chance of intervening if there's any problems. Instead of having your patient, you've got to wait until they come in and see you and tell you about it. But I can already tell, it's like, you know, we're doing our screening or our checkup or preventative work. And it's, all right, you're actually a little bit tighter here in your thoracic, and that's causing, it's acting as a driver for you to be out of alignment through your lumbopelvic hip area. And that's going to possibly tweak your hamstring, which is your original problem. But if we nip it in the bud and we do a little bit of corrective exercise, checking your alignment and do some releases and get you back on track, problem solved. So there's a greater chance of doing some on-the-spot intervention and seeing how that is applied. So even though we might have a hamstring injury, but then they go back on the court and it's like, You're going back into your default pattern of motor problem, bad habits that you have, and now we can correct it. I can work with your coach, you know, whenever he does this, you know, we need to cue him to the point where now it's his normal motor control pattern. So when he's in a game, he doesn't have to think about it. So we kind of clean things up. So that part is nice. And then because I see him every day and we talk every day, we develop that trust, you know, that rapport. They feel comfortable telling me, you know, I feel a little something. That's all I need to know. I don't need you to tell me, I think I have patellar tendonitis. I need you to tell me, I'm feeling something in my knee, and can you just check it out? It might be nothing, it might be something, but let's take a look.
Can you ever just watch a game, Lakers or not, and not be thinking of all the different things that are either happening or not? I mean, especially your team, because you know the intricacies of these guys. Are you ever able to just watch somebody just shoot a three-pointer?
No. Funny, because you start to look at people and how they move. Like, I can't even, someone who's using a crutch or a cane, I don't really think, are they using it on the right side,
right,
or did they have it on the wrong side? Or, you know, you look at someone who's using, you know, their arms in a sling, it's like, okay, they aren't wearing it right. It's funny because you just automatically start to think of these things. Watching someone's posture, it's like, okay, I can't go into a gym and like I can't look at someone working out, because it's like you want to say something, but you know you can't because you're a complete stranger.
Right.
When I'm watching a game, you see all these things at the same time. And I'm not only watching our players, but I'm watching the other players,
right,
too. I know certain players on the other team have certain injuries, so they have some tendencies. I'm watching how they respond on the court to how our guys are responding to them. It's really tough to turn it off, but
right,
it comes so naturally. It kind of just flows, so it's not an interruption of my thought. Sometimes it's a little tough when I'm sitting in the stands and I'm being a fan. If I go to a game, I can certainly turn it off, and to a certain point, I can't turn it off completely. I think of it as like if you're a movie director and you're watching a film,
right,
you cannot turn off, like you're looking at lighting and editing and sound and dialogue. You're watching the movie at the same time, but you're looking at all those other aspects that other people don't even pay attention to. They just,
right,
watch the movie. But you're watching the movie and you see everything else around it. It's kind of like the same thing. You just naturally see everything around it while you're watching the game, or you're watching someone who's just moving across your visual path.
I like that LA Hollywood reference right there, going to the directors. I do like that. Totally LA, Judy. No, but
yeah,
I'm the same way.
Yeah.
You know, I listen to podcasts, and being in radio for 10 years, same thing. I can't turn it off. I hear a radio commercial, I'm kind of critiquing and judging and kind of deconstructing and saying, ooh, that's cool, I like that. Or, you know, this could use some work.
Taking IPAs over TKAs. It's the PT Pinecast.
The PT Pinecast is powered by ptlive.me. PT Live wants you to know, we know you love ortho, but love doesn't always pay the rent. And let's face it, home health is, well, home health. Join PT Live's growing team of on-demand physical therapists working from anywhere, anytime, with anyone. Screen patients, help clinics nationwide, and next date night you can say, have the ribeye, honey. PTLive.me. We'll take it from here.
The PT Pinecast with McKay.
So if you see something during a game, are you in a player's ear? Is that too much information for the player mid-game, or, you know, maybe at the half? Or how's your interaction during a game?
It depends, because you don't want them to think about, you know, whatever possible injury it is or possible, because they need to focus on the game.
Mm-hmm.
You know, as much as I'm looking at the game this way, they're looking at the game a different way. They're not focused on their knee, their shoulder, their back, whatever it is. They're focused on the game, and that's where I need their focus to be. But if they aren't trusting their leg and they're now compensating because they're thinking about their leg, then I need to get in their ear and say, all right, I know you're thinking about your leg because you're moving differently. Are you having any problem? If you're not having a problem, you're not feeling it, you're just a little tentative. It's like, okay, remember we went through all the drills, you did fine. You went through the runs, you did fine. Are you feeling anything right now? No. Well, you know what? You're good to go. Go play. Take that part out of your mind. Go play your game. In that case, I'll be in their ear. But
is that during a game?
Depends on the person. Depends on what I need to say. Sometimes it might just be a quick word in their ear while they're on the bench, maybe during a timeout. But usually, you know, you want to stay in the background a little bit, because where I'm sitting, I can certainly talk to them on the bench. It might be something I file away for the next day. This is what we need to work on. And if I know as an individual, if I bring it up, they're going to think about it more, I certainly won't bring it up during the game.
Right.
As long as I know that it's not going to lead to any harmful compensations, it's like, okay, we can clear it up tomorrow. But every person's so different in how they approach a game. Some people, you just give them a little cue, they're fine. Other people, you cue them and they perseverate on it. That's no different than when you're in the clinic. It's, how am I going to talk to the patient? Do I explain things in a medical term because they have that knowledge? Or are they don't want to know and they basically it's like, just do what you need to do and show me what I need to do.
It's similar, but Judy, come on, that's got to be so cool. I mean, your clinic is the Staples Center.
But it's funny because we work with them every day away from the crowd or away from the outside influences. And it's just like being in a clinic. So when they walk through the door, they're there to get better. That's really the key. And it's not like, wow, this is so-and-so, because it's like, well, so-and-so is here to see you for his knee.
Right.
So I need to get to work
as
opposed to, wow, that happens to be so-and-so, and, you know, I don't know what I'm going to do. It's like, if you don't know what you're going to do, then why are you there?
Right. That's a good point. Still got to be fun after all these years, though, is seeing someone perform on that big of a stage and you being able to be a big part of that. That's your work out there. That's still rewarding to you? Is that still fun?
It's still fun.
Good.
I mean, even if it wasn't on this stage and it was just someone who wasn't, you know, I saw them in the clinic and they're coming in and telling me that before I had pain picking up my one-year-old child because my back would hurt, now I can pick them up without any problems, I can hold them. That's still great.
That's a big win. You know? Yeah, no, absolutely.
So as long as they're achieving their goals and they're happy, it gives me a lot of satisfaction too that I've done my job. The great thing is working with this group is I actually get to see them accomplish their goals. And how often do we get to do that? I mean, I'm not going to go to my patient's house and see her pick up her one-year-old and I'm peeking through the window. It's like, that's a little invasive. So it's definitely great.
That's good to hear. Is that something like that still fun after all this time? So cool.
Absolutely.
One topic you had brought up before, developing your personal brand as a clinician and seeing your history and seeing how you're still going, seeing all the degrees and all the certifications, that's great. But what I see about you is you're still going right now after 30 years working as a PT. You're still seeking out degrees and situations to advance yourself. But how do you develop your personal brand as a clinician? How do you find that?
Well, let me ask you a couple questions.
Okay.
What do you think of when I bring up personal brand?
I guess I would say how I approach a situation or how I approach a patient is how I would say my personal brand, how I interact.
Okay. And then how does your brand get out there?
Hopefully, for me, it's one patient at a time. And hopefully those interactions, I mean, my fingers crossed, those interactions are good.
Okay. And do you think you can influence your brand?
Yeah, absolutely. I hope so. I mean, I hope I can put a put a positive spin. The harder I work, I hope it gets better.
I absolutely agree with those things that you said. When I look at personal brand, and it's something that I about with clinicians who are already practicing, certainly with students as they're entering the profession, I don't think people think about managing their brand, developing their brand, and who they are. And if you don't, someone else is going to manage your brand for you.
Ooh, that's a good point.
Someone is going to, if you aren't actively managing your reputation, so if we use reputation as a different word for brand.
Right.
And if you're not paying attention to it, then what gets out there might not be the message that you want to get out there. But if you don't know what that message is, then how are you going to develop who you are? For example, I was recently talking to some of the clinicians over at Stanford Sports Medicine Department. I have a friend who works over there and had a chance to speak with some of the staff members, and we were talking about personal branding. How does that get developed? And one of the clinicians said, well, I don't think you can influence it. Like, that's out of my hands. It's out of my control. And they happened to have an intern who was a student there, and she's interested now in going to PT school. So I asked her, all right, you were a patient here, and I'm sure that you asked around, who's a good therapist? How is your therapist? She goes, absolutely. You checked out how the other athletes were doing with similar injuries to yours. You did the same thing, right? She goes, yep, I did. And I think that caught this clinician a little off guard. It's like, wow, you know, I didn't realize that they were all talking and, you know, they were conversing and people were, you know, checking out, like, you know, my outcomes and everything. It's like, they absolutely do. And it's the same thing with your patients, that when they're in the clinic and they're watching you, your patients are watching you and the other patients are watching you. They don't have to be your patient. It's anybody in the clinic. So as a patient, they're watching their own therapist, but they're also watching, well, how is my clinician interacting with the other patients? How is my clinician interacting with the other clinicians? What's the other clinician doing to their patients that has a similar injury that I have that might be different? Why are they doing that instead of, why am I not doing that? How come they get to do, you know, the fun plyometrics and I get to do the isometrics?
Right.
You know, why? So they also are looking at, well, how are you communicating? Are you professional? Are you friendly? Are you goofing off? Are you joking around? You know, and that gets out there. The doctors hear about it, positive or negative, they hear about it. And they tell the therapists, develop a reputation, the doctors, they hear about it. They also look at the outcomes, the patients, they tell other people, go see Jimmy. He's a guy that you want to see. He helped me a lot. I'm sure you've worked with different clinicians and they've got repeat patients.
Mm-hmm.
They've got family members and coworkers that come back. But what about the people that don't come back? What about the people that left? What about the people that disappeared? Now, a lot of times you're assuming that, well, they must have gotten better. That's why they didn't come back. But what if they are an unsatisfied customer who decided it's not worth me coming here anymore because I'm not getting better, they're not friendly, they're not nice, you know, whatever it is. But do you know why they're not coming back?
Right, that's a good point. If they're unsatisfied, they're not necessarily going to tell you. They're just not going to show up again. You don't wonder if they either got better or got worse or just didn't like what they were getting.
Right. So when you're developing your reputation, your brand, you certainly want your name to get out there, that you're the person to see, that you're the clinician of choice. And we're all consumers too. And as much as we've talked about this person or this place that you should go, I don't know where you should go, but I know where you shouldn't go. Don't go here. Don't see this person because they're really bad.
Is the way to make patients gravitate towards you is to make sure you're conscious of that attention, because it's always happening. I mean, even in my one orthopedic rotation, I noticed it, that was actually exactly happening. The other patients, either my patients or other patients, were watching me. They were very, very conscious that I was the student, which was completely fine with me. And making sure I knew that really did keep me on my game. And I hope, just hearing this from you, I don't lose that even after school and getting into my first job, because this makes a big deal.
Right. I think that you should be aware that you should be on your game all the time, whether they're, just assume they're watching you and they're critiquing you and you're going to keep yourself on your toes. I mean, if you're waiting for someone else to raise that bar for you, it's too late.
Yeah, that's a good point.
You've got to kind of put that bar where you want it to be. If you can't do If you know that you've done your best, you certainly can't do any more than that. But if you are waiting for someone else to raise that bar for you, what are you waiting for?
Right. Yeah, you've got to be the person out there raising that bar for yourself, or else you,
right.
I mean, you can slide by. I'm sure you could be a mediocre PT and have a long career. But if that's the way you want to do it, man, I think you're wasting a lot of opportunities with a lot of patience.
Right. I mean, we've all encountered people that are just kind of going through the motions, and you can tell. You can tell they're not happy in their job. I mean, I remember I had a patient, he came in and he worked for a tire store for about 25 years. And on the first day he comes in and he tells me, I've never met this man before, and I'm asking about his job and what he has to do. And he hurt his shoulder throwing the old tires into a bin. And he said, I hate my job. And I go, well, you know, why do you hate your job? He goes, this is not what I want to do. And I go, well, you've been doing it for about 25 years now. Why are you still there? He said, because I need to put food on the table. I need to support my family. And this is how I do it. And certainly not going to judge anyone for their choices. And he's making a good living and he's supporting his family and everything. But I mean, this was easily 15 years ago, maybe more than that. And I still remember this conversation I had with this gentleman. All I can remember after that was thinking, gosh, you know, I'm a stranger to him, and this is the first time he's met me. And in a matter of 10 minutes, he's told me he hates his job. And I can't imagine how he reacts and he interacts with his family and how unhappy he is and how he must share that negativity with his family probably every day.
Yeah.
And wouldn't it be great if he had a job that he liked? Maybe not loved, but liked, at least liked.
Mm-hmm.
And that way, when he goes home, he's a happier person and maybe interacts with his family in a more positive way. Taking that another step, it's like, well, am I in a profession that I like and I enjoy? I'm not taking that and being a negative person and sharing that in my life, too.
Right.
You know, so it's all about these choices that we all make. You know, yes, it's definitely a great profession. I'm fortunate to be where I'm at now, and I'm glad I like what I do. I love what I do, and I have many opportunities available. If this ended for me tomorrow, I'd still be happy. You know, I could still treat patients. It certainly wouldn't have to be at this professional level. I'd still be happy.
It sounds like you're a PT first, and you get to work with the Lakers, but you really love the profession, not necessarily the setting, but because it sounds like you care about the patient, regardless of who they are.
Yeah, it makes it fun. It's certainly challenging. It's not for everyone. You know, one of the questions sometimes students ask me is like, well, like, what's your day like? And it's like, well, there's no holidays. There's no days off. There's no sick days. You go in every day and you work until the work is done. And that's not for everyone.
Right.
You know, but if you really like what you do, then it's worth it.
That's got to be a brutal schedule. I mean, it's an 82-game season. So what's a regular work week like in terms of hours for you? Because it isn't 9 to 5. I mean, that's the furthest from.
Right. I mean, we're heading to a challenging part of our schedule right now. We're starting a 10 games in 15 days schedule. We're going to, these first four games, we're going to do four games in 5 nights.
Wow.
Which is rough. They play 2 games back to back with less than 24 hours in between. We travel on the days in between when we're supposed to, you know, that's our rest day. It's actually
right.
A travel day. So, you know, people look at, well, they just play for 2 hours. We're there in the morning. We've got shoot around on a game day. We're there early. Training room opens at like 8:30. Players have watching film at 10 o'clock. Before then, we're getting everybody ready for the day. Whether it's anything preventative, alignment, releases, corrective exercises, some strengthening, some drills, any, you know, all these things. And then they watch film, they run through drills. Afterwards, we're doing some recovery work, take a break in the afternoon. We're there at the arena 2.5 hours before the game starts.
Wow.
And we do it all over again after the game. Hopefully there's been no injuries. We're constantly on the watch for that. And then we're there for maybe 45 minutes up to an hour after the game is done.
Wow. That's a 2-hour basketball game right there, and that's what everything
that's
that goes into it. Plus, I mean, you know, you just said the word travel, but travel takes a ton of time, so it's not just, you know, travel and you're there.
Right.
So before a game, players are shooting around. Here's my question, Judy. What is your shot? Are you outside? Are you shooting the 3-ball? Are you down low? Are you lay up? What's your shot?
Back in the day, my shot was actually a baseline jumper.
There we go. It's a hard shot to hit.
I know. Hey, I like challenges.
So do you jump in games of horse? I mean, I'm not saying you have to name which player you've beaten, but have you beaten some of these guys in horse or what?
I stay in my lane and I let them do what they do and they let me do what I do.
What keeps you going in terms of sports? 30 years working in PT, you approach it, I think, is the right way, which is these are patients and they're high-quality athletes. So what keeps you going? Still exciting for you in terms of the players out on the court?
Yeah, it is. I think just taking the approach that they're individuals and each person's so different. I mean, the game is still, you put the ball in the basket. It hasn't changed. I mean, the sport in itself has changed in terms of speed and the style, but the object of the game hasn't changed, but the people change.
Right.
I mean, it's no different than being in the clinic where people have asked me, it's like, don't you get bored? You're working with knees, and then your back, another back, an ankle, throwing a hip, maybe a foot and elbow, you know, shoulder here and there. It's like, yeah, but they're all different.
Yeah.
Every single person is different. How each person is going to progress and the milestones, when they hit, do they hit it? How are you going to motivate them? How are you going to approach it is all different. And you just find ways of making it more efficient and a little bit more, I don't want to say faster, because I think people think faster, it kind of gives a wrong impression, more like efficient. Because I think the big difference between someone who's first starting out in their PT career is that you don't know the patterns yet. You can't pick up on the different nuances. You have to look at things in a more generalist approach until you get used to, okay, this is what they mean by, you know, a person with patellar tendonitis, this. This is what I was taught in school, but now let's branch out a little bit because there's more. And if I looked at the hip a little bit more and see how that influences the knee, then I actually get better results and a little bit more, you know, a little bit faster. Well, let's look at movement pattern and motor control. Okay, then I get even better results and I'm faster in getting them better. So as you get more experience with certain patients, like you've seen now a few hundred knees, it's like, I got this one. You know, I've seen enough of these that I've seen this pattern. So the more you see, it's like, it's fun.
Yeah, I think that's something that I noticed coming from my rotations was that, man, everything just took so much longer for me, or it seemed as if, it just seemed like my CI was just so fluid and everything. And I was like, when do I get there? You know, I was just so nervous because I'm like, I'm doing the exact same thing she is, but she seemed like there was no gravity working against her at all. And here I am sweating and absolutely just losing weight right in front of the patient and taking so long. But it's good to hear that eventually I'll get, you know, not necessarily like you said, faster, but just more efficient because I've seen it. Everything
right.
I'm seeing isn't necessarily completely foreign to me. And I've read about it and I've learned about it in class and I passed the test, which is great. But now I want to be able to see it and recognize it.
Right. Because when people ask me, it's like, what's the biggest thing that I can do to get working with pro sports? What do you need to do? What
right.
do you need to be? And I go, you need to think fast and you need to be right fast. You don't have time to be wrong. So if you've seen like 1,000 ACLs, then you can recognize it that much faster
right.
and you know what to do. So when I say that you have to think faster or be faster, that doesn't mean skip steps.
Right.
That means know the steps
in order to
be fast. But you need to have that ability to do differential diagnosis quickly. But if you've seen 500 of these, then you know how to differentiate all these different problems and how to approach it because you've seen it before.
Right. And to bring it back to basketball, that's just reps. You know, if you've shot the free throw a million times, now you can recognize when that's going to go in or not go in because you've seen it. So that makes me feel a little bit better, Judy, because I don't feel so lost. Like, you know, 9 months to go to graduation, and I'm like, I don't feel like I'm efficient. I don't feel like I'm fast. So that makes me feel a little bit better that I just haven't seen it. So once I do, I'll get
right.
a little bit better at recognizing it.
I would worry if you were fast right now.
Don't worry, because I'm not.
because are you being fast just to be fast, or are you being fast because you can process it quickly?
Right.
And I've seen a lot of students where they want to skip ahead to the fun stuff.
Right.
Because the beginning, the more initial stages, it's like it's working on range of motion and working on mobility, doing isometric, getting the muscle to fire. It's not as fun.
Right.
But then it's like, okay, now we get to the fun stuff. And it's like, okay, if you didn't cover the fundamental steps in the beginning, they're going to break down in the more advanced stages. And then you're going to have to backtrack. And then it takes you more time.
That's a good point. All right. So, Judy, entire episode is a pint. But before we're done with the pint, we like to take shots. So if you had a parting shot, not actual shots, but if you want to, you can. If you had a parting shot, a little word of advice for a student, maybe a new grad, something with your vast experience, more than 30 years working as a PT, what's one little bit of advice that you would give to somebody who's just coming out of school looking to graduate and master those basics?
I think that's it right there. Master those basics. That's the key right there. Don't be so eager to jump ahead that you need to understand the fundamentals and put those in your toolbox. It's kind of like if you're eating a meal, you can do a lot with fork. If you go into a meal and you've seen dessert fork and your salad fork and your main entree and your different knives and your spoons and everything, you go, I don't even know how to use it. I don't even know what that is. So you got to master. It's like, okay, I got the fork. I know what to do with that. I got the spoon. I'm good with that. I got a knife. Okay. I'm good. So you can accomplish a lot with the basics, but if you don't know the basics, you're going to run into trouble. And there's a reason why your instructors at this point are trying to give you the fundamentals. When you're in the clinic, you're eager to jump ahead and it's like, oh, you know, that's cool too. I want to manipulate right now. And you know, I want to do all these cool plyometric drills and, you know, do all the advanced stuff, you know, but it's like, are they ready? You're the only one who knows if, you know, you're the guide. You're the person who's going to guide them on, are they ready? And they're trusting you, you know, but if you are advancing them too quickly, then it's going to be a problem because they're going to run into problems down the road or come back later on with a more serious problem. And you're doing a disservice to your patient. You know, learn the fundamentals and master those key points.
I like that a lot. That's killer, killer parting shot right there from Judy Cito. You can find her on Twitter at Judy Cito, and you can find her sitting a couple rows back from the team courtside as she heads into a stretch of an away trip. Good luck this season, and it was just a heck of a time talking to you and being able to pick your brain with all this experience in PT.
Glad I could spend this time with you, Jimmy.
Absolutely. Judy Cito, thanks very much for being on the PT Pinecast.
Thank you.
Like what you hear? Leave us a review on iTunes. It's not like our moms can keep giving us 5 stars every day. Or can they? The PT Pinecast is intended for educational purposes only. No clinical decision-making should be based solely on one source. While care is taken to ensure accuracy, factual errors can be present. Our lawyers made us read that.